It was a clear night, and there was enough moonlight to illuminate the sleeping settlement.
Oh, I don't like it here.
She watched a group of Sek men shuffle out of the settlement and into the cover of the woods.
Yet the weirdest thing is that I couldn't tell you why. It's not like they've done anything to threaten us, and they don't seem to care whether we're here or not as long as we work with them. But maybe that's it. Why don't they care? They've made no effort to try to find out if we're going to do them harm, or if we want to stay. It's like we're invisible to them.
Perhaps that is because they have no concern about us, consider us no threat. Is that not really the thing that unsettles you the most? They aren't wary. You have no power.
Hey, make that we have no power. Or are you bailing out on us?
Bailing?
Shit. Maybe you're right. But what's wrong with that? The only thing we have going for us in a situation like this is that we don't look like a pushover. If we come across like the kind of pussies who can be walked on easily, then we'll buy the farm in no time.
My dear doctor, pray do not allow your paranoia to boil over. Has it not occurred to you that the problem, as you see it, has nothing to do with our little group, per se? This is not about how we appear to them. It is about how they are. We do not threaten them because we have assimilated into their system, and they have not become friendly on our terms because to them such a thing is alien and does not, in fact, exist.
I can't believe you're arguing philosophy with me on this. Perception and...
And bullshit. Maybe you know what to say, but not me. Don't care. Something here not right. JB tell about crop?
Yeah. Crop cultivation exactly the way they were doing it in the ville we found.
Come, sir. You cannot suggest that a method of cultivation constitutes grounds for suspicion.
It does when it's a method we've never seen before, and the wood on the troughs they've got here has been freshly cut. It looks like a new idea for them. And it's just a little suspicious that they started using it so soon after the other ville got wrecked.
Are you certain that your fears are based on nothing more than that they are different to us?
Maybe. But you've got to admit, Doc, it's what's kept us alive up to now. Gut instinct has saved us more than reasoning.
Has it? Has it really? I wonder.
Phew. Stay too long already. Let's go Anchorage.
He's right, lover. No matter how much we argue about this, the fact is that they haven't welcomed us, and they haven't been hostile. It's not going to stay that way forever. Sooner or later, they're going to want us to either do more or stop using their resources. Maybe the time to go is now, before they reach that point.
What about Directville? If they did that, then they may have attacked others.
That's not really our concern, JP. It only becomes our problem if they make it ours by attacking us. If they don't, they can do what the hell they want to other people.
You haven't seen it that way before.
Maybe I've never been this cold, this pissed off, and this willing to get the hell out of the North. A silence fell across the cabin. It was eventually broken by Jack.
So go tomorrow. Get away from this place and feeling, yeah?
Yeah. Hell yeah. Morning couldn't break quickly enough. Knowing that they would be on the move, none of the companions could get much rest, but for differing reasons. Jack and JB would have been glad to get out of the ville that night, not risking any kind of confrontation over their choice to leave. Mildred and Christy were in their own ways concerned over Ryan's attitude. The man who assumed the mantle of leadership seemed, for the first time they could remember, uneasy with it. Which didn't bode well, for any group needs a strong leader in times of trouble, when decisions need making fast, and debate isn't an option. As for Doc, he too was pondering Ryan's state of mind, but for a different reason. Ryan, for his part, wasn't content with his state of mind, nor his behavior. He thought he'd shaken it off with the coming of action, but since the hunting party and his witnessing of Taggart's death, the uncertainty had returned. Possibly the inertia of the past couple of days had contributed. They had taken part in the Ville's activities, but these had been matters of routine, with too much time for his brooding mood to settle once more. Try as he might, the nagging fear that they were doing nothing more than treading water wouldn't go away. As long as they were on the move and in some kind of action, then he was able to keep these fears at bay. But one moment's respite, and they would creep around the corners of his consciousness. Maybe that was to be his fate, to keep moving, almost literally running away from his fears. As the companions emerged from their cabin into the chill morning air, the Inuit were already about their tasks and paid the companions the same attention as for the past 3 days, none at all. The six of them went and collected their morning meal and ate it in almost total silence. This wasn't unusual, as it seemed that the Inuit behaved in much the same way, and merely assumed, if they thought about it at all, that the companions were falling in with their ways. After they had eaten, Ryan searched out Thompson, while the others waited in the center of the vill. The fact that they weren't joining any of the parties of workers, as they had on the two previous mornings, should have delineated that something unusual was to occur. Yet, they were spared no more than the occasional half-glance. Ryan found Thompson in his cabin. When Ryan entered, the chief was seated alone, and seemed to be doing nothing more than staring into space. He had to have been doing something before the one-eyed man entered, and yet it appeared to Ryan as though the Inuit chief could have been in the same position all night, and could continue to sit in this manner all day.
"I wanted to tell you that we're moving on."
Ryan paused, waiting for an answer, but there was none forthcoming. The only thing that could be remotely construed as an acknowledgement was a barely perceptible nod.
"It's not that we don't appreciate your letting us stay here, and it's not that we're not prepared to work, but we feel that we should be moving on to where we were headed before we first ran into your hunters."
"If you must go, you must go. You have given this wall is taken, so we have no problem with you."
Ryan waited, wondering if there was anything beyond this to be said. But Thompson fell silent again, leaving Ryan feeling as though he had to explain.
"We're ready to go now. We'll head back to the bottom of the slopes and out across the plain on the Ank Ridge Trail."
Thompson didn't acknowledge this last statement, so Ryan turned and left the chief's cabin to return to his companions.
"We go now?"
"Yeah, they don't seem to care one way or the other, but keep it triple red just in case."
"You don't trust them?"
"I don't trust myself. I've just got a weird feeling that this is too easy."
Without a backward glance, they left the center of the vill. They left the huts and cabins behind, and they plunged through the undergrowth until they reached the concealed exit to the trading trail. In an uneasy silence, they made their way along the trail as it snaked first upward, then back down toward the plains, repeating the route of the hunting party from a few days previous. It seemed as though their passing hadn't even been noted by the inhabitants of the vill. Only a few of those working around the huts had raised their heads as the companions left, and there were none to watch them pass on the trail. But the companions were only too well aware that appearances can be deceptive. It began when they hit the plains. As the lower slopes of the volcanic region filtered their sparse growth of tree and foliage into the icy rock and snowdrifts of the wastes, so the weather began to bite harder. Without the warm channels of lava infusing heat into the ground, the air around them grew harsher. Without the shelter of the trees, the winds were unbroken, strong and stinging as they bit into exposed flesh. Taking the march in line, keeping a steady pace, they found themselves unconsciously slowing as soon as they were out of shelter. The rocks were slippery underfoot, the freezing air filled with ice and snow, the sulfurous smell catching at the backs of their throats, making breathing hard and unpleasant.
"Why the hell did we have to set out now?"
The conditions back in the vill were much more clement. Yet something was tugging at the corners of Ryan's consciousness, making his gut turn as he thought about the Inuit. As did Mildred and Jack, he had a feeling that was hard to articulate, that screamed at him that it was time to leave. He hoped that the others felt the same. Behind him, JB and Jack were thinking much the same in their own ways. Both men huddled into their thick outer coverings, trying to keep as much warmth as possible within the fur and fabric. As both were slight of build, wiry but thin, they lost more heat than the others, who had a little more body fat. Movement generated warmth, but it was no substitute for the upward flow of volcanically heated air they had left behind. Jack wondered if they would be able to hunt before long. A good supply of food would be imperative. JB wondered if the next village or settlement was more than half a day's march. What would they do if they hadn't come upon somewhere by nightfall? Mildred and Christy were also wondering such things, but in the Titian-haired woman's mind was something else. A growing feeling that there was danger, and not even as far as on the horizon. The Inuit had seemed indifferent to their going, and the bears and wolves were generally nocturnal. So what was the source of the feeling that hugged itself to her, a black void that drained her spirit? She wanted to say something, was too cold to speak, unless she could articulate clearly and simply, not wasting breath. Mildred was worrying about Doc. The old man seemed to be okay, and although he was vague, that was hardly unusual. All the same, there was something odd about him that she couldn't quite identify. Whereas once, whatever the madness in him, they could see the real Doc shining through, this time, There was no real Doc. He seemed to be acting normally, but it was only surface, a bland exterior masking what? That was the worrying thing. She had no idea what was beneath. Doc, for his part, put one foot in front of another and kept walking, lost in his own world of dreams. The trading trail hugged the lower slopes, winding between crops of rock that clustered malevolently at the base of the volcanic surge. Beyond, there was little except flat rock, bleached white by sun and wind, building layers of ice to reflect the light with a blinding intensity. The wind swept across the barren landscape, driving ice and snow almost horizontally against whoever or whatever should be in its path. Yet for all the hostility of this environment, it was free of the lurking dangers that the lower slopes held. There was no cover out there for any predators to conceal themselves, ready to strike. No bear or wolf that could hide until you were upon it, with no time to defend yourself. It was obvious that, as the trail wound down from the tree line, that it would be suicide to strike out across the icy plain. The settlers who had forged the trail had opted to try to read as safe a path as possible among the crops of rock that littered the base of the downward slope, and would provide enough cover to keep the worst excesses of the weather from them, but not enough to enable the predators to lie in wait. The trail itself was a treacherous combination of some loose topsoil that was trodden flat and hard by generations of wags and feet, iced solid and then thawed during volcanic activity before being frozen over once more, and rock from beneath the thin crust that poked through, hard and treacherous on the ankles, if caught. It was barely 12 feet wide as it snaked in and out of the taller rocks, with some towering up to 20 feet over the companions as they walked. The majority of the rock crop was between 5 and 10 feet in height, but the shadows cast by the taller formations were ominous. To their left as they marched, the rocks were almost continuous, but to the right there were breaks, eroded by the conditions, that gave out onto the empty and desolate plain, allowing the howling gales to drive ice and snow through the gaps. There were places where snowbanks had been made, spilling over and narrowing the trail, threatening collapse on those who dared to pass. Christie's feeling of foreboding increased, but she put it down to the weather. The gales presaged a gathering storm, and it seemed likely that the gaps in the trail would turn the passage into a wind tunnel, with possibly fatal results. She knew that the rock passage would have to eventually give way to more open territory, and at least there they wouldn't be trapped in a bottleneck when the storm broke. Jack, too, had feelings of imminent danger, but his were based more than on a doomy premonition. Since they had left the forest behind, he had been aware that they were being followed. Whoever or whatever was tracking them was expert, but few were as expert in the arts of hunting and concealment as Jack Lauren. The albino could hear movement coming from behind the crops of rock that comprised the broken walls of the passage. There were no voices, no vocal sounds at all, just the movement of feet on ice and snow, the occasional disturbance of gravel and small rocks that barely registered over the screaming of the gales, but could reach his highly attuned ears. He wasn't sure if they were human or animal sounds, but he knew that they had started to track the companions once they had left the woodland slopes. They were bargaining on the fact that the noise of the winds would make them completely inaudible. They'd been getting closer for the past half hour, taking their time in gaining ground, choosing patience over speed so they wouldn't reveal themselves. But now, they were right on top of the companions, and it was time to act. To avoid suspicion, Jack chose to move slowly, overtaking JB and moving up to confer with Ryan. He was almost level with the one-eyed man and about to speak when all hell broke loose.
What?
What? Jack and Ryan looked up at the same moment to see a shower of rocks tumble from the peak of one crop, rushing toward them. Jack felt a shove in his side and found himself tumbling to the left, catching his ankle and feeling it turn, thrusting out a hand to find the far wall that would stop him falling or hitting the rock wall with his unprotected head. Jack pushed Ryan, then threw himself to the right, narrowly avoiding being hit by flying boulders. He cannoned into JB, who managed to catch him.
What? Get Ryan! Under attack!
Ryan!
JB left Jack and hurried to Ryan, who was scrambling to his feet. His combat pants were ripped, and blood seeped from a superficial wound just below the kneecap. It hurt like hell, and he knew it would soon stiffen up, but he had to keep going. The armorer helped him to his feet.
No accident.
The rockfall hadn't blocked the trail, but up ahead a snowbank had been dislodged, and the white death poured down, blocking the way with a wall some 8 or 9 feet deep.
What the hell?
Being hunted! With us for a while!
Why didn't they take us when we were in their ville?
Who says it's them, Christy? Maybe it's someone else.
Doesn't matter who the fuck it is. They've got us trapped while we're in here. We need to get the hell out.
Looking back along the way they had already traveled, it became clear that their only option would be to head for a gap in the outcrops that led onto the plain. But that wasn't inviting. Suddenly it became clear why whoever was hunting them had chosen that moment to begin the attack. Outside the passage, the plain was a churning maelstrom of ice and snow plucked from the surface, visibly tracing the conflicting currents of the crosswinds. The sky was heavy and dark, with clouds that were about to burst and loose their sulfurous rains and snows upon the plain, a vicious storm that would give them no place to hide.
Fire blast. We can't risk going out there. We're gonna have to backtrack.
But that's exactly what they want. Why else take out the trail in front of us?
Yeah, maybe. But we don't have a lot of choice. So we don't go back like bastard animals to slaughter. We go back to hunt them down and chill them.
Sounds good to me.
Ryan barked directions into the howling mouth of the encroaching storm, shouting himself hoarse to be heard as the conditions suddenly dipped. He and Jack would try to get up into the outcrops to track down the hunters responsible for the rock and snowfall, while the rest of the companions would start to backtrack. They knew that moving out onto the plain was impossible now that the storm had arrived, but they were reluctant to go back as far as the forested areas, with their resultant threats, until they knew who was trying to direct them. JB and Christy led the charge back along the trail, with Mildred lagging behind to make sure that Doc followed. The old man seemed to be taking in what was happening, but the beatific smile that now seemed ever-present on his face did little more than mask whatever may or may not be going on inside his head. Jack and Brian began to scale the rock walls. Each handhold was like clutching ice. Their fingers were numbed by the ice and wind, the toes of their boots slipping on the treacherous surfaces. It was difficult enough to ascend to the top, without the added burden of having to watch for any attack that may come from above. The fact that they were able to reach the top without confrontation was a sure sign that their unseen enemy had retreated. As they both stumbled onto the uneven surface that plateaued across the outcrops, they could see no one. The clear area in front of them was empty, but as Jack squinted into the swirling snows, he was sure that he could detect some movement on the lower levels of the foliage as the bushes and grasses were disturbed by their opponents. He directed Ryan's attention with an outstretched arm, not wasting breath on words. Ryan acknowledged and indicated that they should move toward the area, circling it so that they could come upon their attackers from the rear. Without a word, both men set off across the plateau as quickly as possible. Below, in the channel formed by the rocks, the other four companions were making their way back. JB had the mini Uzi ready, set on rapid fire, and Christy held her Smith & Wesson Model 640, but Mildred didn't bother to unsheathe her ZKR. It was a precision weapon, and these were no conditions in which to fire, besides which she had Doc to contend with. The old man was moving fairly quickly, but without a sense of urgency. Frankly, she didn't want him to unsheathe his Lamar, as he was completely unpredictable in this state, and there was no telling at who or at what imaginings he may be tempted to fire. She hung back to guide him, and he seemed to be only too pleased to accept this. But they were falling behind Christy and JB, and she urged him to increase his pace. Ahead, the armorer was squinting against the storm, wincing as the blasts of air and snow hit him broadside when he passed an opening onto the plains. Whoever was against them had timed their move to perfection, he had to admit. The only way for them to go now was back toward the relative shelter and safety of the lower slopes, which offered their trackers plenty of cover. It was obvious that this was where they would go, and it was obvious that they now knew they were being tracked. From here on in, it was a matter of cat and mouse, and JB had an unpleasant feeling that he was one of the rodents.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.